podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, Three Opinions, One Everton Podcast.
Welcome to episode 194 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We're joined today, myself and Pete, by Sean Lunds from Sport Witness. Lee's away in Rome on a barbering course. Not surprised with his hair, to be honest with you, but you know, we'll say no more about that. So it's just the three of us today. How are you this morning, Sean, after that 1-1 draw against a very good Brighton side, it's got to be said?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I mean, if I went on Twitter this morning, and it seems I'm the only one who was happy about the results, that's what it felt like, reading some of the reactions to it. And I thought it was a good point against a very good side. I mean, they're not in great form, are they? But they're much better than us. I think that's what people need to realise about games like that. And, you know, it's a fluke goal, isn't it? What are you going to do? Take it on the chin.
Exactly that. I mean, we're just saying, maybe, you know, I think that initial, because of how late we conceded the goal, it's always disappointing because you are close to getting 3 points and against a good side. So when you concede in the 84th minute, you are going to leave Goodison Park a little bit, not so much dejected, but a little bit disappointed. But me and Pete were saying on the way up to the car after the game yesterday, you know, I think we'll look back on this as a good point against a decent side, and a side who came to Goodison Park last season and absolutely tore us apart, albeit a different manager, a few different players. But, you know, it lives long in the memory of players, and players don't forget. And, you know, Brighton were never going to come to Goodison, were they, yesterday, Pete, and none have learned lessons from our win against them. Don't forget that 5-1 win that we had. So Deserby wouldn't be deserving of his paycheck if they came to Goodison Park and hadn't learned lessons from the last time we played them as well.
Definitely. And, you know, I think that the previous two games are really worth holding in mind when you look at yesterday's performance, because, like Sean said, I mean, hate to say it, but as it stands, Brighton are a much better footballing side than us. And when we were at home against them with Frank Lampard in charge, that was the problem. We tried to play football against them and got absolutely torn apart. Whereas when we went to their place with Daesh, you know, we went with a completely different system, counter-attacking football, and we cleaved them apart. And I think yesterday's game was really interesting because when we looked at the team sheet, it looked initially like they were playing with a back three. And I know we were having a bit of a chat before kickoff to say, you know, is that maybe Deserby thinking about the counter-attack? Is it maybe thinking about this, one of their centre-halves having a bit more freedom to come out with the ball and have a bit of protection? So it was very much a tactical game, I think, yesterday. And I thought we got ours absolutely spot on. I thought we were, you know, we were brilliant for the vast majority of the game. I thought Jordan Pickford was absolutely outstanding. I just thought he read the game so well, got his positioning spot on. I thought he was cool-headed. I thought we restricted them to very few chances, really, for Brighton, despite how much of the ball they had. I thought we worked so hard, and it was a bit of a cruel goal to concede. But I think there's so many more positives to take away from that game than negatives. And look, of course, we're going to be disappointed when we led the game for so long, but I think pretty much all Evertonians would have taken that if you would have offered it to them before the game.
Do you know, I think it's one of them games where the result doesn't tell the story of the game. If you watched it back in the full 90 minutes, the highlights that you'll watch on Match of the Day or whatever other providers available, they don't tell the story of what that game was, because you'd expect Brighton to rock up at Everton and create tons of chances, have loads of shots on goal. You know, they put four passes, like you've said, last year, and they didn't. They had Pascal Gross put one over the bar from just on the edge of the box. They had a free kick, and that was literally it. They created nothing. Even the goal, like I've said, is a complete fluke from nothing. Even Ashley Young's doing what he's supposed to do. He's blocking the cross. It's just a fluke. But Everton created more chances than they did. Dominic Calvert-Lewin had a couple of breakaways. McNeil put one past the post. There was that one on the line at the end with the big scramble. So, like Pete's saying, the tactics were spot on from Everton yesterday. They knew they couldn't out-football Brighton, so they outthought them and outthought them instead. And I thought Everton were brilliant. I, I'd rather watch Everton do that than try and play football and get rolled 4-1 and lose and be at the bottom of the table, you know what I mean?
But this is the conversation I had yesterday on Twitter, and you know, a lot of people will point towards the fact that the possession was 80-20 in Brighton's favour. Obviously, that's a massive percentage for any side to have. And that, you know, that shouldn't be Everton at Goodison Park. We shouldn't be just having 20% of the ball, especially against a side like Brighton, as a Brighton are a good football side, of course they are. And I sort of said, listen, we've been there and done that in terms of trying to play this particular brand of football that you may see as, you know, good on the eye and attractive and open football. Do that against them. And inside 30 minutes, it's game over. And then you'll come away. If you get beat 5-2, are you going to be happy getting beat 5-2 because, you know, we played open football? Of course, you know, it's a points business. And after the last two seasons, what we need to understand is that we've all wanted a bit of stability, and we've all wanted a manager who can, you know, potentially get the best out of this side in their way. And we know what Sean Dyche is all about. He can be pragmatic, but we've also seen him, and he alluded to it after the game, against certain sides this season, Everton have been much more attacking and had more of the ball. But against some sides, you just can't do that. So he had a particular way of playing. As you said, you know, the players, they left it all out there. You know, they came off absolutely dripping in sweat. The commitment was there. And like you said, Sean, you know, if you look at the chances created, I think it was 10-7 if we include block shots in Everton's favour. And we had the better chances against the Brighton side with all that attack and flair. I mean, you know, you're taking off Lallana at half time for João Pedro. You know, Evan Ferguson's going off for Ansu Fati. These are the kind of changes that they're making. You know, this is a side that have got strength and depth throughout. They also had quite a few injured players missing as well that probably would have started the game also. This is a quality side who, as we've said over the years, they've had a blueprint in place for many, many years. So when they change manager, it's seamless. So when he went from Potter to De Zerbi, it was seamless. And the players know the system. They recruit to a system. Whether that be managers, players, or what have you, there's a system in place at the club. And we're a long way from that. And Kevin Thelbell alluded to that recently in that BBC podcast. We can't, unfortunately, and Brighton was used as the example, we can't at the moment, you know, look to recruit, say, 3, 4, 5 windows in advance, as Brighton probably do. Everton have been working on a window-by-window basis. So we are behind them in that sense. But the actual tactical setup for me, and like you said, Sean, it was correct. We did it the right way. At times, you could probably argue, and the manager said the same, we weren't as effective on the counter, I didn't think, when we had the opportunities. And I was saying to people around me in the ground yesterday, when we get the ball, when we're playing this way, that's one thing we have to do better, is protect the ball when you get the ball. So make sure that you are that bit more efficient with it. But that's all I could really sort of say, because, you know, we're 6 minutes away from victory, Pete. And as I say, you do come out of there feeling a little bit dejected. But if you look back on it this morning, and I think a lot of people will do that after maybe what they thought yesterday, if you look back on it this morning, you feel a little bit more cheery about it. And listen, we've come away in the last 6 days, 7 days now. We've beaten West Ham away in the league. We got through to the quarterfinal of the Carabao Cup with a comfortable performance against Burnley. And we beat a decent side, when we drew with a decent side in Brighton. So 4 points and moved on to the next round of the Cup. Not a bad week, is it really?
No, not at all. Not when you look at, one, how many games we've had, two, our, you know, our previous run of form, our previous record against, you know, against Brighton, particularly at home. There's definitely more positives than negatives to take away from the game. And I know I singled out Jordan Pickford a few moments ago, but I thought Mikalenko had an outstanding game. I thought Garner Gay did really well coming back into the side and playing the majority of the game on a yellow. I thought Calvert-Lewin was just absolutely outstanding, working so hard, you know, up there on his own. He won pretty much everything. I thought he was really unlucky not to get a goal, like you were saying, Mike. There were maybe a couple of moments, a couple of breaks where arguably we could have been a little bit smarter or made a slightly different decision. So easy to say, isn't it, in hindsight or when you're watching the game from the stands. I think maybe one point of criticism that I potentially do agree with a bit that's come out from fans is maybe the timing of some of the substitutions yesterday, because there was some very, very tired legs on that pitch. I mean, particularly Jack Harrison, who just absolutely worked his arse off for the whole game. He had a really tough final 20 minutes. And it's so easy to say, isn't it, when you come away and you've dropped 2 points, you know that Dyche should have made a change quicker, or he should have thrown Dan Juma on. Could have made that change and we could have conceded too. You can't get into that argument. But I did think it was interesting that he decided to make some very, very late changes, arguably at a point where, you know, players, you know, particularly Beto, are unlikely to be able to really affect the game. I don't know what your lads' thoughts are on that.
I read comments today from Sean Dyche, I don't know if from last year or a couple of months ago, and he was saying that he looks at substitutions, and if he thinks a game's going how he wants it to go and the structure is right and the team performance is fine, he won't make them unless it's for injuries or he thinks there's going to be a drastic change. And I think he looked at that yesterday and thought, what am I going to change here that will make a significant difference? Now, the goal comes from Mitoma, but before that, he'd done nothing. He's their best player by a country mile. Everyone's raving about him. And he had done nothing. Everton had blocked him out all game, completely nullified him. And then it comes from, he's on the outside the box, hits the defender and goes in. Nothing you can do about it. They started losing possession in the middle of the pitch, but then who do Everton bring on? They've lost Onana. Who have they got to bring in there to start doing that and control the tempo a bit more? He changed better, but Calvert-Lewin was fantastic yesterday, like you were saying. He was running, he was putting himself about. The breakaways every time with him. I don't see any change yesterday that Sean Dyche can make that significantly changes the outcome. I actually think if he puts Patterson on for Young at right back, Mitoma just rips him apart. Patterson's not a good enough defender to deal with him for 20, 25 minutes of a game. And I think Brighton noticed that straight away and were probably hoping for that change. Maybe you put Harrison off and you bring Patterson on and have both of them deal with him down that side. Maybe. But I don't think he fancies the Patterson at the minute. That's just, he's young, he's inexperienced.
I think the thing is, I mean, again, at the match, that was a lot of the talk was, why aren't we making changes? I mean, you probably heard a lot of sort of moans and groans as well around by you, Peter. We're not too far apart. And I think all that I would say is, obviously, like you mentioned, the comments that Sean Dyche has said previously in regards to substitutes and you know, that's how he is as a manager. What I would say is, having played 6 games in 3 days, not, you know, what do we make? Was it one change to the side against Burnley and from the West Ham game? So Decore came out, didn't he? And Dan Juma came in. So not sort of rotating the side on Wednesday ultimately probably cost Onana yesterday, because he said he's been playing with a tight car, so he couldn't make the game yesterday. And that's what I would say is, I could notice after about sort of 70 minutes, a lot of them were flagging. Decore, energy levels had dropped, and we know that's his game. He's, you know, he's busy. He's hunting the ball. Calvert-Lewin looked tired. He said that obviously Jack Harrison looked tired. So I think the question that I would always ask myself is, if you're bringing on a substitute with fresh legs, is that worse than leaving on a player who's absolutely being flogged to death? That's the question that I would ask as a manager, you know, because having someone on, I'm not saying Dan Juma or what have you, but if you bring on even Beto, you know, is that better bringing him on than, you know, having Calvert-Lewin now at sort of 50% after playing 3 times in 6 days? That's the only real question. Now, not to say, you know, like Pete said, not to say we would have seen the game out. And then, you know, the manager then faces comments like, well, he would have kept the 11 as it was, he would have won that game. So as a manager, you can never win. So if he brings on Patterson for Young, and like you say, Patterson gets beaten by Mitoma and they score anyway, then he gets sticked then for taking Ashley Young off and not keeping Patterson on the bench. Like, you know, could he have gone Patterson and Young on the right hand side and doubled up on Mitoma? Maybe. But as a manager, it's all ifs and buts, isn't it? You just don't know how these things are going to play out. You know, with the best preparation in the world, anything can happen. And it was a fluke goal. You know, Ashley Young, again, you know, since he's come in, he's not been great. I think he played well against Brentford, especially after getting booked in the first minute. I think he struggled a little bit, and I think his legs now have gone. So what I would say is, it's quite clear the manager, like you said, doesn't seem to fancy Patterson currently. We saw Seamus Coleman get 45 minutes at the 21s yesterday against Man United. So I'd expect going forward, Seamus Coleman, when he gets his match fitness, he will come in ahead of Nathan Patterson and Ashley Young, in my opinion. But there's lots of questions around. I mean, substitutes was the big talk, wasn't it? Because that was the first reaction. Well, You made no changes until they scored. And why not? You know, tiredness has killed us. And I do think it was a factor, but it's always, hindsight is always probably a wonderful thing. And knowing the manager, and we've known him now for long enough to know what he's all about and how he manages games of football, it wasn't surprising. But whether it's right or wrong, it's difficult to say. You know, he knows better than we do. And if he seems to think that it was going okay, which we can all say that it was, of course it was, Everton kept them out. You know, there was no real threat. As we said, decent save from a free kick. That dunk hit the door particularly well. He thought he was Ronaldo, wasn't he, the way he lined that one up and hit it with a bit of dip. Decent save. But besides that, there was nothing. And Everton were doing all right. And it's all, as I say, hindsight's fantastic, isn't it? But it's, you know, they're a good side. They're a good side, Brighton. And, you know, when you've got that kind of threat on there, I suppose people may say, well, when you give up so much possession, you bring it upon yourself. You do. But we went away and did similar. We just bet on the counter-attack and scored five. That was literally what it was. So it's one of those. It's always a bitter pill to swallow when you can see the goal so late. But I think we will always look to, well, what were the reasons behind that? Was it fatigue for the players that were on? Was it the fact the substitutes weren't made? But I mean, Pete, would you have liked to have seen the substitutes made anyway at 1-0? Do you think that they should have been made yourself? And though, like I say, it is hard to say, you know, whether we think he got it right or wrong. But what is your opinion on it?
I think we should have made substitutions for tired legs. I mean, for me, Harrison was the one I would have made, because you could see the physical toll that the minutes were taking on his, you know, on his legs, on his work rate. I thought he had an outstanding game. I'm not being critical of Harrison's performance in any way whatsoever, but you could see he was struggling to get up and down the pitch. And there were a couple of moments where I think rather than carry the ball, he probably tried to clip it long into the channel. And I think it was having an effect on our football. Now, if you bring Dan Juma on, he's going to carry the ball better. He's going to give you more attacking threat. But when he loses it, he's going to be high up the pitch. He's not going to work like Harrison to get back. So I understand the argument for not making that change. I fully understand it. And if we win that game 1-0, you know, are we sat here, you know, praising Sean Dyche for, you know, for not making changes he didn't need to make and having faith in certain players? Who knows? So, you know, I do take even my own comments with a pinch of salt, but it was a strong feeling I had watching the game that we were in need of fresh legs. And I do think when you're defending in that intense way, when you've got so little of the ball, it's such hard work holding your position. You're constantly moving. You're constantly having to watch the game, watch your runners. It's such hard work. Is it a sign of our squad? I don't know. Is it a sign of Dyche's kind of relationship and opinion on certain players and personnel and who he trusts and doesn't trust? But, you know, when you look at the likes of Beto and Chimiti, Dan Juma, players we brought in, it seems a bit strange to me that they're not getting a little bit more game time than, you know, maybe they have been. And, again, I'm not being overly critical, but I thought we worked extremely hard yesterday, and I felt like the lads on the pitch could have done with, you know, at least two or three fresh players to help the momentum of the game.
Do you know the irony of it is they've bought better this summer because they didn't think Calvert-Lewin would get fit, and now he's probably the fittest he's ever been, and they're left with a striker on the bench who we all think should be getting game time. But then if Calvert-Lewin wasn't playing, we'd be asking questions of why Calvert-Lewin's not getting game time. So it's a lose-lose, isn't it? You can't, as Sean Dyche, I think he sees Calvert-Lewin as the better striker for his system, but then he's still got a £30 million striker sat on the bench, and what does he do?
But I mean, that's it though, isn't it? But it's up to these players though as well. You know, we look back on Wednesday just briefly in terms of what happened there. You know, we brought in Dan Juma, and if we're being brutally honest, he didn't really do a great deal. Did he to force the manager's hand for him to then think, well, going forward, you deserve more game time? Because he was given a chance there. And I felt a bit sorry for him. But when you look at the difference between how he played and how Doucouré plays, it was night and day. Unlucky, you know, not to get a goal, you know, with that little ball to Dom down the wing, and then Dom obviously gives it him back, takes a little nick off the defender, and the defender gets it away from him in the end. But, you know, when these players are getting a chance, they've got to take it. We've said it over the last few weeks or so. The players have got to come in and get the, you know, take their opportunity, and then have the mind of thinking, well, you know, when I need you, I can trust you to come on and do a job. Or if so-and-so is injured, I can bring you in, no problem at all. You know, and I think it showed yesterday, you know, with Onana's injury, it was a big miss. We know how good he's been in recent weeks, especially the consistency is there. Against West Ham, I thought he was terrific. Had a good game against Burnley again, and we obviously got a goal. And we're seeing the Onana that I think everyone thought that we had bought last year. But like I keep on saying, he was a young kid adapting to the Premier League. So it was a big miss, and it showed the limitations, I think, the side had. Obviously, Garnaghy comes in, but he's different. He's not as physical. He's not as big and strong. So we are still short in areas, but there is more quality there than last season. And players have to take the chance. I mean, you look at Mykhailenko, for example. You know, a player who quite often has been chastised by fans. Fans think he's not up to it. Obviously, he had an injury, didn't need to start at the season. But when he's come in, I think the last three or four games especially, I think he's been absolutely terrific. Obviously, he got a goal. You know, great for him to score his first goal at Goodison Park, of course, yesterday. But that's as high as I've ever seen him up the pitch. I've never seen him in the box of my life, in the attacking box. But he started the move, didn't he, in terms of nipping in. Got a bit lucky, but he went. And it's great, Peter, we spoke about him briefly last week, but it's great to see Mykhailenko, isn't it, in terms of coming in, performing consistently against good opposition. Because, you know, he's defended, obviously, we've mentioned Saka, Salah in recent times. When, you know, we had away at West Ham, he thought he was really good. I thought he was good against Burnley. And then again yesterday against a good Brighton side. But it's great to see Mykhailenko get that consistency. We know defensively that he can do it. But when players do get a bit of stick and people think, you know, they compare them to Leighton Baines or they compare them to Luca Dean, you know, it's just nice to see him have that form, that consistency, and nice to see him get a goal as well.
Definitely. And you referenced Onana there and the importance of having some settling in time and his age. I think people forget how young Mykhailenko is. You know, he's a very, very young man at the start of his career. And, you know, he's also required some time to embed into the squad and the system and the Premier League. And we've had, you know, change of management in that time as well. I've always thought Mykhailenko is a really solid defender. And I think people are starting to crystallise on that opinion a little bit now that he is a bit more established and is that a bit more consistency in the first 11. But I was really pleased for him yesterday with his goal. But I think as well, people need to remember that, you know, that's also not the role that he's asked to play. He's not asked to get high up the pitch. He's not asked to be an attacking fullback. He's asked to play in a defensive system. So it was great that he had the confidence to get forward and the permission to get forward and, you know, the endeavour to get his goal. But I think people need to remember that, you know, we're watching Mykhailenko play in a Sean Dyche side, you know, with a counter-attacking system, not Leighton Baines or Luca Dean playing under Roberto Martinez. You know, because it's not a fair comparison at all. Completely different players, completely different systems. And, you know, we need to value what Mykhailenko does bring us and what he is good at. And he's not going to be a player that gets loads of goals and assists, but he's consistent, he's solid, he makes important tackles, he's good positionally. I don't know about you lads, I've certainly seen the development in him, because I think when he first came in, you could see that he would often get targeted. And I think he's a lot tougher now and a lot smarter. So he's acclimatised to the Premier League, and he's now a stable fixture in our, you know, in our team. He's our starting left back.
I think you can see the work that Sean Dyche has done with him on the training pitch. They've obviously worked on his defensive side of his game more, not as like his ability to tackle and stuff like that. It's more where he needs to be, what he needs to be doing, reading the game. You can see there's definitely a development there. And like you say, he's only young. By the time he hits 24, 25, and he's had perhaps a few years under Sean Dyche, he'd be a solid left back. Because of the way the game has developed, we've developed this idea that fullbacks should be getting 13 assists, 14 assists a season and a couple of goals. And, you know, because of Alexander-Arnold and Robertson and people like that, and the vast majority of fullbacks aren't doing that. Certainly not for Everton, who are a mid-table team, hopefully, at best, or a relegation team. Sean Dyche wants them to be solid, hold the line, defend well. That's your job. And he does that very well. So I see no problem with him.
And he said, didn't he think it was in his press conference on Thursday? And Sean Dyche said, listen, he was asked about Mykhailenko. He said, first things first is defensive, the defensive duties. That's his job as a fullback is to defend. He said, obviously, there's learning and development to do. He said he can be obviously in attacking areas. He said, but I want my fullbacks to defend first and foremost. And he's perfect for the manager, really. And you know, that's, I think, obviously, with Seamus Coleman come back in on the right hand side, I say I do think he will come back in. You've then got probably that bit more balance again, because Ashley Young has struggled, like I said, and Patterson, although I think he should be getting game time. I think he should have started against Burnley. And after a decent performance after the first 20 against West Ham, and it should have started yesterday. But it's all opinions, isn't it? But it does, I think, Seamus Coleman coming in, another trusted player in the Sean Dyche camp, that's for sure. That gives us that little bit more balance across that back four again. But just great to see Mykhailenko. You know, he is, you know, nice to hear his name sung by the Goodison faithful yesterday after he got his goal. And he's a man who's been through a lot since he's been in this country. Let's not forget, you know, in terms of what's going on still in Ukraine. And obviously had his dad who's been involved over there as well. And he's been through a lot of rough times. And he's been through, you know, he was bought by Benitez. He was gone within 2 weeks. Lampard then comes in. Lampard goes and Sean Dyche is coming. And the man's 24 years of age. So still very much adapting, like you said, Pete. You know, he's got to be looked at as a young player who has taken a bit of time to adapt to the Premier League, understandably. And we're now starting to see that development bear some fruit, which is great to see. But I think all in all, like we were saying yesterday after the game, I think we look back on that as a positive point at the end of a positive week. You know, we're in a League Cup quarter final. You know, I'm not into cup runs. I'm into cup wins, but that's the next step. You know, and to get a home draw against Fulham, great. Another sounds as good as some Park, no doubt. You know, Sean Dyche has brought a bit of consistency in recent weeks. We've had some great results, which is great to see. Some great wins, some good performances, and I think we'll put yesterday into that category as well. You know, it was almost perfect in terms of the result, wasn't it? So I think we can come out of this week, two wins and a draw, and be happy with the work that's being done before we obviously go away to Selhurst Park, which is a difficult place to travel, of course, next week. And we're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast as we look ahead to the trip next weekend to Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace currently sitting 10th after a decent win away at Burnley yesterday, two goals to nil, 15 points. So not too far away from ourselves. We're almost in touching distance there. But aside, Pete, that we always know it's difficult to travel there. It's one of those grounds I find that, you know, although it's not one of the biggest grounds in the Premier League, it's a ground that certainly has a good atmosphere. You know, they have the Selhurst Park Ultras or whatever they're called in one corner behind the goal, banging the drum and making a racket. But it makes for a good atmosphere. You know, it's a tight ground anyway. You know, small pitch, not huge in terms of numbers, in terms of attendance. But it's always a place that I never look forward to going. I've got to be honest with you. You know, we've had a variety of results over there in the last few years. I think was it 0-0 last season. We've had a couple of decent wins there over the years. Had a couple of defeats, but aside that, we certainly thought after Zaha left, he'd miss him. But obviously, Elise's been injured for quite a while. Eze's just coming back in. You know, real key players to them. But it will be a difficult game, won't it? Because it's just a difficult place to travel.
Definitely, like you, in a weird way, I've got a bit of a soft spot for Crystal Palace because I think they've got a great stadium, great fan base, you know, proper football fans, proper football people, and in recent years that they've been run well, you know, as a football club, and they buy well, they promote youth, they promote development. And it's you might not call it one of our bogey teams or stadiums, but it's one of those places you don't quite fancy going, and you never feel too confident when we're there. So I think to come away with any points, again, you consider them to be good points or great points if we manage to get a win. But they just kind of epitomise stability, don't they? You know, they haven't got any players in the kind of the ilk of Zaha that you might consider to, you know, maybe belong in a better team, let's say, or that, you know, they often get linked with your kind of what you might call your top six clubs or your Sky Six clubs. But they're just a really solid, hard-working, organised unit, and you know that they're going to be guaranteed, like, you know, mid-table status, Premier League survival, just by virtue of how reliable they are. But they're very, very difficult to play against. And I'm kind of stilling myself for a potential 0-0 board draw, or I think a very low-scoring game. I wonder if it could be one of those where hard work cancels out hard work. Because I think in some ways they're a similar team to us. I think maybe the difference is Everton have been through so much instability over the past 2 or 3 years. I feel like we're almost still a little bit in recovery, and we're still kind of finding our feet, and we're starting to see that stability come in. And I'm not suggesting for a minute Crystal Palace are what we should aspire to be. But I do think in a weird way they kind of represent the bare minimum that you need to be in the Premier League, because you know what you're going to get from them, you know, week in, week out.
I think you're right. And you know, I think I always see Palace now as a sort of mid-table side, you know, from anywhere that from 10th down to about 13th is where they would sit in my mind. And I think the home form has a lot to do with that. But they've been a bit like us. They've been better away, really, this season. If you look at the games that they played at home, they only won one game out of five. And in there, they've had 2-0 draws. So your 0-0 bet there, Pete, could be the one on the table. You know, they've gone away. They got beat to Villa, which, you know, is certainly, you know, no shame in that. But they've gone away to Old Trafford, and they've won there. They've gone away to Burnley, and they've won there. You know, they got beat by Newcastle away again. Obviously, good side. You know, they lost. The defeats have come to decent sides. Tottenham, Arsenal. They're just, I think, an efficient football team. You know, with pace, we know that. With power, I always say playing sides, you've got pace. But Everton, I think, are learning lessons, and Everton are now starting to have game plans that work. And we said it last week, obviously after the win against West Ham, another good side. You know, Everton went to the London Stadium and won a game that probably meant no one really saw us winning, and with a better side, in my opinion. And you know, we look at Palace again. Different kind of team, but Everton aren't going to be the favourites going there, I wouldn't have thought. But I think now, Sean, we are seeing Everton as a better away side, aren't we? After, you know, quite a few years of such poor away form. You know, we had great away form during COVID, didn't we, when there was no fans, you know, but that was really, it was almost like neutral venues, wasn't it? It didn't really make a difference where you played your football. But now Sean Dyche seems to have found a bit of a recipe when we do go away from home to nullify sides and come away with some kind of points.
Yeah, I think the way Sean Dyche plays doesn't work for Goodison Park in some aspects, because he wants to sit lower and counter-attack and use what Everton have got on the counter-attack, but that works perfectly away from home where you're allowed to do it. I mean, what I would say about Crystal Palace is that I don't think they're significantly better than us. Especially those kinds of players don't make a difference. It seems like Everton. So I would go there quite confident of getting something, even if it is scrappy. And it does play Sean Dyche's system of, like, he knows how to play against these sorts of teams and get good results against them, especially away from home. And I'll take that any day of the week. But at the same time, Everton can't go to Crystal Palace and let them have 60% of the possession. There's got to be a better balance that way. If we can accept it against Brighton because they'll do 600 passes a game and pass it around you and play through you and everything between. But if you're doing that against Crystal Palace, that's when I'll join in with the criticism. There has to be more going forward against them sort of teams, because I expect us to beat them teams.
I think you're right. And you know, we will always, well, we should show understanding based on the side that you're playing against. You know, and we know Brighton are a side that enjoys possession, that enjoys to have the ball more often than not. But you have to then, when you come up against sides you aren't as comfortable as a Brighton or a Man City or Liverpool, you know, with the ball at the feet, you've got to then make sure that you don't just fall back into that system where you're not having a great deal of possession. I mean, looking at the games, you know, Palace at home, it's you with Forest 0-0 and Fulham 0-0, and both games are pretty much around 50-50 in terms of possession. And I think that's something that Everton need to be aware of. Palace are not going to pass us off the park. They're not as good as the sides that, as I said earlier on, who like to have the ball at the feet. And Everton have got to make sure that when we get the ball, that we protect it, like I said earlier on, but we're effective with it as well. And there's no reason why we can't go there and certainly pick up points. I almost now, it's strange, Pete, really, isn't it? Because I think we wanted, and we still want this fortress Goodison Park, of course, and get back to those days where, you know, we look under Moyes and Martinez in his first season, where sides hate coming to Goodison Park and we give anyone a game. And we've gone away from that in recent years. You know, Goodison Park, we've almost, you know, look at the sides that we've lost to. You know, whether it be even Luton in recent times, and especially games last season, Southampton, Wolves, where we've just sort of rolled over and our bellies tickled. But now, away from home, I do feel confidence. It's strange, you know, going away and trusting this side to go away, have a plan, and as I said to Sean, come away with some kind of points.
I definitely think you're right in that there's a reduction of pressure, I think, when we're away from home, and you can almost, sounds silly to say, but you almost can feel it in the players. They seem to play with it a bit more freedom, and I think what Sean was saying was important, that I think this system that Dyche kind of coaches us and gets us to play, of, like, you know, I guess like the low block, looking to exploit the counter, really, really suits us away from home. Because, you know, effectively what we're saying is, look, you're at home, all the pressure's on you. You try and break us down and we can really hurt you on the counter-attack. I do wonder if that might be slightly less effective against a team like Crystal Palace, who probably aren't going to come on to us quite as much at home. But I think, so far, our away games have been pretty enjoyable to watch, and let's hope the run of form continues.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm looking at the West Ham statistics. We're talking about possession again, and it was around 60-40. So I'm not even sitting here expecting Everton to go there and do 50-50 in terms of possession, because Everton just aren't a possession side. We can have more possession, but we're never going to be a side at this moment in time that has, in most games, more possession than the opposition. You know, it's just, that's just how we are. And I'm fine with that. But like you said earlier on, Sean, it's got to be a case of, yeah, that's okay not to have quite as much as the opposition, but it can't be 80-20 every single week, or 75-25. I mean, even the Burnley game in midweek, look at the possession stats again, 60-40 in Burnley's favour at Goodison Park. But he did nothing with it. Do you see? So I think we always know possession can be one of those statistics that it can be one of those things that can throw things out and be a little bit deceiving, where people will go, well, hang on, they had 75% possession. That's terrible, as we saw yesterday at Goodison Park. People were saying the same to me. That can't happen. But it can happen, as long as you're effective in what you're doing. But, like we're saying, you know, it's still got to be adjusted for certain sides. And I'm sure that we will see that at Selhurst Park.
I personally think Sean Dyche couldn't care less. He could not care less if the opposition play hundreds of passes and we play 20, if we win 3-0. It makes no difference to him whatsoever. It's one of those that fans get very upset about. Oh, they're embarrassing us, Goodison Park, 70-30% possession, whatever. It doesn't make any difference if you win the game. And that's all it is for Everton. They've just got to pick up points and make sure they're safe. That's all it is. After 2 years, why? We're not a team that has to worry about those sorts of things. We have to be effective of what we, and use what we've got to our advantage. And Sean Dyche is doing that. The numbers might not reflect it, but, you know, if we talk about numbers, look at the XG that he's been going on about. We're creating chances with it. We don't need the ball and passing it around midfield. We haven't got the players to do that. So what are we doing with it? We're being effective with it. It makes no difference.
No, it doesn't. And as fans, do you get it? What would you rather have? More possession or more points? And the answer would be the same for everybody, won't it? You want more points? Of course you do. And you know, the famous XG yesterday, ours was higher than Brighton's. So against a side like Brighton, who had 80% of the ball, we had the better chances. So this is what we've got to look at. You know, the underlying stats, tell the two pitchers. We've said this for quite a while now, even at the start of the season when we weren't winning games and we should have really been winning games. Obviously, Fulham, Wolves are the two that spring to mind. Sheffield United away, of course. You know, those kind of games where Everton had the better chances. You know, it wasn't just a case of having sort of three or four. Everton were having 15, 20 and not putting the ball in the back of the net. And that's the thing we have to look at as fans is possession is an indicator, but it's not the indicator to dictate who the better side is or if a game plan has worked or not. It's just an indicator. It's just numbers. And as I said, I know what I would rather, and that's Everton pick up more points than have more possession. But let's see how it goes. It's at Selhurst Park. You know, as I say, tricky place to go. Good, always good atmosphere. Pete, I know what you're going to say, but what's your prediction?
0-0 board draw.
I think I'll agree with that. Sean, what are you saying?
I'm going to be confident for once and have a 1-11 and win.
Why not? Why not? Last away game, obviously 1-0 away at West Ham. Why not? I was going to join you, Peter, on 0-0. I'm going to say 1-1. I'm going to say 1-1. But I can see a draw. I can see points. You know, I've got a confidence away from home now, which I haven't had for quite a while. But it wouldn't surprise me if Everton win the game, that's for sure. You know, it's, as I said, we're certainly, as an away side now, we're certainly seem to be better prepared when it comes to going away from home. But listen, let's see what happens. I think it should be, you know, this week, and what I'd say to end the podcast on is, let's look back on a good week. You know, we've had some really tough weeks and some really difficult times. Let's, you know, this has been a good week for Everton. You know, let's look forward now to a quarter final in the League Cup. Let's look forward to going away to Crystal Palace after picking up 4 points against West Ham and Brighton, two sides that I think most people would have had us down for nothing. And don't forget, last season, those two fixtures yielded 0 points. So we've got these little wins are things that we think we have to hang on to and think, is progression being made? I think it is. I think there's a bit of consistency. We're certainly a lot more solid than we were. And the resilience seems to be there as well. So that's us for today. Sean, I appreciate you jumping on a Sunday morning / afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
More than welcome, mate. And that's us for this week. And we'll be back ourselves to look back on the Crystal Palace game next weekend before we go into yet another boring international break. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.